Well, if you will, open your Bibles to the book of Ruth. You'll find that in the Old Testament, right after the Judges. So the next several weeks in the book of Ruth, capturing the thoughts of what God intended there, who the main people are in that section. But I thought I'd start this morning just reading a portion of a poem that was written by Pastor John Piper, Ruth, Under the Wings of God. Every year, John Piper and his church writes several poems that go along with Advent at the Christmas season. And this one, at least the first half, captured well, I think, where we're heading. So if you'd indulge me, I'm not a great poem reader. The rhyme and rhythm is here is a little different than roses are red, violets are blue, but hopefully you'll capture some of the things that captured my heart reading this. My daddy lets me watch three sheep beside the mill, and if I keep them safe and make them fat, he said that next year I'd get five instead. If you keep your three in line, then you can handle five at nine. My daddy is always making rhymes, but they're not always very good sometimes. His grandpa laughed, "You're pretty sharp for being eight. And how's your harp these days? I'd like to hear you play sometime. I heard your daddy say you've gotten really good. Let's go. Sit down beside the sheep and show me what you've learned." So David took his grandpa down beside the brook and mill, beneath the corb tree, and cradled like a lamb the sea. Shaped Kenner in his lap and played a ballad Jews had sung and prayed for centuries. The old man laid his head back on the tree and swayed, as if the music made the tree a ship mast on the rolling sea. Then David noticed Obed's eyes were closed. It better satisfies the ear to close the eyes, he once had heard his teacher say. It blunts the beauty of a thing to feel, a rival pleasure that make appeal. But when he saw on Obed's face the tears, he stopped. "Grandpa, in case you'd like to hear a happier tune, I know one called the Red Raccoon. I'm sorry that you're sad. What's wrong? My mother used to play that song." "You mean great-grandma Ruth, Grandpa?" "That's right. She was a great-grandma in more ways than you know, young man. Grandpa, I'd love it if you can to have you tell me all about great-grandma Ruth. Can you stay out with me and tell me how she came to live in Bethlehem?" The poem continues on. I encourage you, if you want to borrow the book or here, you can read these actually online. They've got four parts to it. But I thought it kind of captures, who is this Ruth we're about to encounter? And what does she have to do with this little David boy living in Bethlehem, talking to his dad and his grandpa? The book of Ruth is a precious book. One of sweet bitterness, one of incredible providence, one where God is moving in ways that you don't see in other books necessarily. There's an incredible love story. There's intention of redemption here. And this book is not so far removed from our own lives and application. This divine redemption that has been established in this book, carrying on the line and lineage that we see in Matthew in Jesus' life. David was speaking there in that poem. His father was Jesse. Jesse's father was Obed, as the grandfather of David. We heard that. And Obed is the child of Ruth and Boaz. I encourage you over the next several weeks to meditate upon the book of Ruth. There's only four chapters. It only takes you about 10 minutes really to read the entire book. but just spend some time learning about Boaz and Ruth and the two lines that they came from. Boaz is from the line of Abraham all the way down. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob through all the way to Boaz. Yet Ruth is not from that line. She's a Moabite. A Moabite comes from the line and lineage of Lot. So you think about Abraham had his family. Boaz comes from there. Ruth comes from Lot and all of that line. And how in God's divine providence He takes these two and puts them together. It's a beautiful story. The time period that this book was written is during the time period of the Judges, 1100 BC or so. And to look through the book and trying to find an author, I'm not sure who wrote this book. Some say Ruth did. Others say Obed or Jesse did. Perhaps even David had a portion of it. We know in chapter 4, you'll notice the name David's mentioned a couple of times. So therefore, whoever wrote the ending knew about David. So it could have been a later writing, but the story is most certainly true, no matter who wrote it. There's an incredible theme that goes on throughout the book. 13 times the Hebrew word goel is used, which means kinsman. The root of that word literally means one who redeems. We'll unpack that over the next several weeks. What does that mean, this kinsman redeemer? In Titus chapter 2, verse 14, I just wanted you to jot that verse down and look at some point in the future as you're meditating upon this. I want you to hear this redeeming language that's carried over to the New Testament. Titus chapter 2, verse 14, who gave himself, talking about Christ, he gave himself for us to redeem us from every lawless deed and to purify for himself a people for his own possession, zealous for good deeds. One author summarized the book with an alliteration. Surprisingly so, I actually enjoyed that alliteration. The book goes from famine to family to a funeral, fear, friendship, feeding, a fondness, a fulfilling, and a future. There you go, a capturing of all of that. I've chosen not to use alliteration for this series. Stretching myself. What I'd like us to do today is, and perhaps you've heard the book of Ruth, and there are various ways to shape this and to see how God is working in this, to see the individual people that He's working with, and I want to be able to unpack as much as we can. But today I want us to really see four different areas and look for some application even in our own lives. The four areas I'm going to unpack a little bit is how we respond to difficulties. Basically, when difficulties come, how do I respond? We're going to look at the physical aspect, the relational aspect, the spiritual aspect, and the emotional aspect. So we'll have those up on the screen for you in just a little bit. But I want us to look at chapter 1, verse 1, and listen to the words. Now it came about in the days when the judges governed. So you know what time period this is. That there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn. He traveled away from Bethlehem in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. From verse 1, you don't know exactly who this man is, but it sets the stage, the timing of of what's going on here, and where they left from and why. There was a famine in the land, and this man decided with his wife to move their two sons to Moab. I want you to just get a picture here of what this looks like. Go ahead and go to this picture. Not that you can read all the components, but you can see the entire land. All of the nice colors are the 12 tribes of Israel, where they are from. And they were in Judah, so it would have been more here. Bethlehem. I'll point it out here. It's just right. You see Benjamin? This big word here, Bethlehem's right here. Okay? So, it's a small little town. It's really, I mean, barely on the map. You know, Bethlehem's not a huge city. It's not making major waves of anything. But Bethlehem's down there. But instead of moving north to any of the other beautiful colored areas, they've chosen to bypass all 12 of the tribes of Israel and go to Moab, which is the circle, the red circle I put at the bottom. It's not a very colorful land. No, the reality is, all the other areas are God's land. And instead of even moving from Bethlehem, which may be having a drought, a famine at this time, they've chosen to move outside of God's land into Moab, a place of wickedness, a place who they worship pagan gods. Imagine, dads, difficulties have come, the income is tight, and you have to make a decision. What do I do? God has called us to this land, but money is tight, the food's not coming in. What do I do with my wife and my two young boys? There's no indication here that this man stopped to pray, though he may have. There's no indication here that he sought out counsel from others in the 12 tribes saying, what do you think our family should do? Because if the famine was impacting this family, was it not impacting other families as well? We don't see a mass exodus of Jewish people moving to Moab because that's where the soil is fertile. No, we just know that this man has decided with his wife and his two boys to move to Moab outside of God's promised land. Of course, we know from the book of Judges, things were not righteously being lived out in the land of God. And people just did what was right in their own eyes. And this man was doing what he thought was best. Moving outside of God's land, number one, I want to see in the first 5 verses, when difficulties come, how do I respond physically? This man decided to run away from God's land and to move to Moab. Ask yourself, where do I run when times get hard? The difficulty of the famine came. His family decided to run away from this area that was difficult and to go to an area that seemingly was more fertile and going to be better for their two young boys growing up. Their goal was not evangelism. Let's go and reach the wicked people for God. Let's just go away from God's land and go into self-preserve. Self-preservation sometimes leads our way more than God leads our way. Well, verse 2 indicates who this man is. The name of the man was Elimelech. His name literally means, "My God is King." Fascinating that that is his name, because he just ran away from the kingdom. My God is King, not demonstrated by his actions. His wife's name, the name of his wife, is Naomi. Her name means pleasant. We'll see how her name, she desires to change her name by the end of the chapter. And the names of their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. Mahlon literally means sickly. And Chilion means wasting away. Finding the names, the definition of these names is always fascinating for me. So you've got "My God is King" with Miss Pleasant, and they're running away from God's land with sickly and wasting away. They were Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah, it says in verse 2. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Verse 3, then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. Elimelech ran away from God's land in order to preserve his life. And the very thing that happens when he runs away, he loses his life. Isn't that fascinating? They entered the land of Moab and remained there, and Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. Reminds me of Jesus' words in Matthew 16, "Forever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Wouldn't it be better to die in the house of the Lord than have 1,000 acres somewhere else? And she was left there. It goes on to say in verse 3 that Naomi was left there with her two sons. What is this widow and her two children going to do? Well, apparently they, as they were growing up, they're older, they are of marrying age now. The father is now dead. They took for themselves Moabite women as wives. Well, why not? Because that's the only women around. I often have questioned, why is it that when Elimelech dies, she didn't just pack up her two boys and go back day one? I don't need to be here. We came here for self-preservation. We're not preserving. We're not sustaining. We need to go back. But she doesn't do that. They just grow up and take on Moabite women as their wives. The name of one was Orpah. Her name means gazelle. The name of the other was Ruth, which means her name is friendship or companion. So they take on these two Moabite women. And they live there for 10 years. About 10 years. Verse 5 goes on. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. Is there any shock that sickly and wasting away died? And the women was bereft with their two children and her husband. She was lost. She went there with her three relatives, and now all three of them are dead. When times get tough, Elimelech ran from the land of God to seek his own provision. Believing that he would die without food if he stayed, they ran to the fertile, wicked land and lost their lives. Listen, we must all learn to trust God in all circumstances. To run to him and not run away from him and our own man-made solutions. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, "For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life, as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body, as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow nor reap or gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more worthy than they?" Certainly Jesus hadn't been born in Bethlehem yet, and he hadn't spoken those words, but those words were still true in Elimelech's day as they are in our day. So many times when the times get rough and tough and difficult, do we run for our own solutions as Elimelech did? I believe Elimelech was in sin for doing so. Instead of seeking God's provision, he looked for his own solution. I'm the man. I'm going to take care of things. Let me take my family to the most wicked area. Not to be missionaries, but just take care of ourselves. Doesn't even sound like he even cared about any of his other relatives. He didn't take a whole band of people with him. He just said self-preservation. When we do things in our own might, in our own will, without seeking God at all, we will suffer the misery of our mistakes. There are consequences for decisions. Elimelech made a wrong decision. But listen to me, even in our wrong decisions, God is still sovereign and providential, and he will work good out of difficult things. Now we see here that Elimelech has taken off. There's no indication in the word that this was a blessing on him. All indication is there was a curse upon Elimelech because of his disobedience. But God in his providence was using this, even a bad thing, to turn it to a good thing, because God had someone he desired to come into the kingdom. That's Ruth. God could have done it in any other way, but he had chosen to use this circumstance that God desires, as Romans 8:28 says us, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good, for those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. So physically, I want you to just consider, where do you run when the times get hard? Number two, I want you to see in verse 6 through 13, relationally. Who do I want with me when times get hard? I mean, times get hard, you run away, perhaps, or you run to God. Who do you want with me when the times do get hard? Verse 6, it says, "Then she, Naomi, arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return all by herself from the land of Moab, for she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food back in her land. Oh, Bethlehem's fertile again. I should go back. God is giving food back home just as he promises. So she wants to go back by herself. Verse 7, so she departed from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on. That's interesting. She's trying to return by herself. These daughters are tagging along, even at verse 7. And they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And verse 8, Naomi said to her daughters, she stopped right there in the middle of the road, said to her two daughters-in-law, go and return. This is the first time she'll say return. She says it four times before she finally gives up. Return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. There was certainly a love between these three ladies. May the Lord grant that you may find rest in each in the house of her husband. Basically, she's saying, okay, I'm going home. I'm a Jew. I'm going back home. You're a Moabite. You can't go with me. I would prefer you not to be with me. We've been through some difficulties. You've been very kind to me. Just go home and go find rest in the Moabite land. Now, does that strike you as odd? It sounds very kind. And I read commentators saying, this is one of the most loving things she did. And I'm thinking, how in the world is it loving? You know the true God, and you know that your God has not protected you in this land, but God is always promising and providing in His land. You're going back to be taken care of, and you're looking at these two girls who also lost their husband and basically said, just go away. I don't want you to be with me. I'm going to be under God's protection. See ya. I don't find that to be loving. I really don't. Primarily because, are they going to find rest for their souls in Moab? Are they going to find rest for their souls worshiping again the pagan gods that they were brought up with? How in the world, when you know there's a real God and He is in you, in your life, and He's leading you, and you've heard about what He's doing in another place, how in the world do you look at two people who are also struggling, both widows, and say, it would be best for you to just go away while I go to a place of blessing? Matthew 11:29 says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. She desired rest for her soul back in Bethlehem, and she was telling these girls, your rest must be found somewhere else because it can't be in God. That quote in Matthew is from Jeremiah 6:16. It says, thus says the Lord, stand by the ways and see and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is and walk in it and you will find rest for your souls. The only rest that these girls could ever find, the same that Naomi knew of, was in God alone in seeking His provision. And she does not, because of her pain, because of her difficulties, because of her bitterness of spirit, she doesn't seek for their blessing. She only wants to be by herself and go back home and mope and be under the provision of God. Relationally, I wonder if we think more about ourselves in difficulty than we do about others. Perhaps if we just get off our couch of depression and just go over and minister to someone else, that depression may just leave us and we may actually find the blessing of God. So she kissed them, it says, going on in verse 9, she kissed them. And they lifted up their voices and wept. All three ladies crying out, weeping. And there's such a love here, but I just don't get it. And then they said to her, no, but we will surely return with you to your people. It reminds me of Lord of the Rings. Anybody ever seen Lord of the Rings? Yeah, you remember the part where Frodo's going, go back, Sam, I'm going to Mordor alone. And Sam says, oh, of course you are, and I'm going with you. You have to see the movie to understand it. They're in the water, it was so cool. These women are crying out, we want to go with you. And Naomi just keeps saying, no, return, go back home, I don't want you with me. If the land of promise is here, let me just put this in evangelism just for a moment. All right, you've run from the Lord. You're out of his will, running away. You finally come to your senses. You're like the prodigal son, the prodigal daughter, and you're going back home. But a few people hanging out there in the pigsty with you is like, can we just go with you? What else should you do as a believer? You have been able to evangelize even through your sin that God is greater. And people want to go with you. What do? Just cut it off? No. I'm going by myself. It would be far better. The party is for me anyway. You look at this, and I'm just saying, Naomi, you're still missing it. Perhaps I'm a little harsh here, but I just see this, that she says in verse 11 again, for the second time, but Naomi said, return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Why not? That's where God is blessing. Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? There is something significant here, in what she, her pain is. Certainly it's real. The family line will not carry on. Certainly if you're a mom and you have two boys, you know, well, the family line will continue. But if the two boys die, what hope is there? She goes ahead and explains that a little further. Look at verse 12. She says for the third time, return, my daughters. Go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, even I should, if I should even have a husband tonight and bear sons, once again, I could have some sons, even if that was possible. Would you therefore wait until they are grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. And once again, whereas Elimelech thought of himself and his family first, Naomi is also thinking of herself for her food, her relationship, her spiritual care. Naomi's name means pleasant, but that name is beginning to change in her spirit. Naomi wanted no one. The daughters-in-law wanted her and wanted to go with her people. In verse 14 through 18, I see that there's a focus on spiritual. Spiritually, how do we respond in difficult times spiritually? In verse 14, it says, and they lifted up their voices and wept again. Second time. They've been crying out, oh no, please, we want you. We're crying. We want to go with you. And then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. There is a difference. I mean, kisses can come from enemies, of course, and I'm not suggesting Orpah's kissing there, but just because you have a kiss doesn't mean you're sincere and sincerely going to keep to your word. Ruth clung like the lame man in Acts chapter 3 when he was healed by Peter and John. They get up and he clung to them. I want to be with you. You've made a difference in my life and I'm not letting go. Verse 15 says, then she said, this is Naomi speaking again, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Just stop right there, right in the middle of that sentence. They're crying, they're kissing, they're clinging, and now Naomi's very clear. Someone has left. Did Orpah say she was going? Did Orpah say to Naomi, no matter what, I want to be with your people. I'm going, I'm going, I'm going. Yes. She proclaimed that she's going. The reality is, she didn't. There are a lot of people in life who say a lot, but never follow through. Ruth said the same thing that Orpah did. But one kissed and walked away from what she'd already said she was going to do, and one clung and followed through. It ought to break your heart by hearing that she walked away. Orpah, then she said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Why don't they stop there and cry out and weep? She walked away from the very person who could lead her to God. And Naomi's heart is not broken. And basically, she's begging Ruth, you do the same thing. Return. Her fourth request to return. Return after your sister-in-law. Just go away. Where are we spiritually? It's remarkable that Naomi is content that Orpah walked away. You know, when we started CCMA years ago, 6 years ago, I remember standing at one of the parks. I don't remember which park we were at, but this story came to mind, and I shared it one evening with everybody, because there was an emotional response to starting a church. Oh, we've got to start it. I mean, we went from, we had 150 people at one time at a park, and then another 50 people, and so there was a fluctuation. Everybody saying, let's just start a church. And I'm thinking, listen, I've got 5 children and a pregnant wife. We have no insurance. I'm delivering Domino's pizza. And because you're emotional about where you want to go on Sunday, you're saying, put your life out there for us, Lee, Chris, Chip. Put your life out there and start this church. Because you are trying to go and drive to a place to be comfortable here or go here. And I'm thinking, this is more than where I just drive on Sunday. This affects my entire life. So I said, I went right to Ruth with all of us. Some of you may remember. And I said, some of you will be Orphas. You'll cry as loud as everybody else, but when it comes right down to it, you'll walk away. I need to know who the Ruths are in the room. Who's crying out and clinging to this idea of starting Christ Church and will be here till the end? And certainly we had some Orphas. I'm not suggesting they're all lost. I love the people who end up leaving because they decided it wasn't the right place for them. But for those Ruths, I am so thankful. If you've been here since day one, I'm thankful for you because you fulfilled your promise. We promised, you remember when we got together how long we promised to be together? 1 year. And I'm going to go ahead and be the doubting Thomas in the room. I thought if we're here 6 months, we'll be fortunate. And 6 years later, God is still here, still blessing. And there's a whole bunch of people that weren't at that first meeting here today than were. Here's one of the things in our Christian lives we've got to consider. Do we just talk a good game? Or do we actually cling to Christ and fulfill what we say we're going to do? You got to consider spiritually where you are, because your spiritual life really is evidence in what you actually do, not just by what you say, not even the amount of tears that you shed. There are Orphas in life, and there are Ruths. And I would suggest never name your child Orpah. If God is not the one for you, you will never stand in this world or the next. Cling to Him. Verse 16, going a little further. But Ruth said, and this shows where her life is spiritually, what's going on in her heart, the transformation taking place. Do not urge me to leave you. Boy, that's some conviction in those words. Don't tell me again. You've told me 4 times in return. I'm not going anywhere but with you back to your land. And she'll explain it. Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. There's some strong intention. Where you lodge, I will lodge. That's intimacy. She wants to be a part of the family. There's no personal space here in this Jewish culture. I'm thinking, just move into a different house. No, she's got to be with her. Your people shall be my people. She's changing her identity here. I don't want to be a Moabitess anymore. I want to be a person of God. Your people, my people. And then she nails it there at the end of verse 16. And your God, my God. It was an internal change. It was something going on in her heart more than just what came on her lips. It was actually the heartbeat. I want the God that you worship. Where you die, I will die. This was an eternal commitment. And there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. Well, it sounds like the mature one in this audience here was the younger woman. Verse 18, when she, Naomi, saw that she, Ruth, was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. Once again, it's indication of me. Naomi has just seen one of her daughters-in-law go back to her foreign gods. There's no tears dropped because of that. There's no running after her, no begging her. No, she just turns around and tells Ruth to go away. Now, Ruth has just made this incredible declaration. I mean, this is a verse 16 and 17 you ought to memorize. I tell you what, it is significant doctrine here of what she's committing to. And she gets done with that proclamation. It is obviously a conviction that she will be committed to the rest of her life. And Naomi doesn't weep, cry, celebrate, get on her knees, say, praise God, God is still working here. God, even through my inadequacy of living out the faith, has impacted someone because of my life. She's not celebrating. She is just getting more bitter and bitter, and she says nothing. I wonder what her countenance was on her face when Ruth finally just said, I'm going with you, no matter what you say. If anything but death departs us, may God hold a curse against me. Did her head just drop and say, I can't get rid of her? All right, let's go. You're carrying the bags. I have no idea. But I don't see a heart of joy here. No thanksgiving. I mean, Ruth is a pagan. She's coming from a wicked pagan land. She was without God and without hope. Just a couple of verses to remind you. In Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 3, no Amorite or Moabite shall enter the assembly of the Lord. Do you see that? That was written before the day of Naomi. And if she knew the word, she would know this is true. No Ammonite or Moabite shall enter the assembly of the Lord. None of their descendants, even to the tenth generation, shall ever enter the assembly of the Lord. But God had another plan as he was rescuing Ruth. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12. Read that one. Remember that you were at that time separate from Christ, excluded from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. Anybody here remember being Ruth, the person without God and without hope? That you were in another land you didn't even know. But at some point, either through an incredible minister of the gospel or even a poor minister of the gospel, you were awakened to the truth that there is a God and He's coming after you. There was a day that all of us, none of us, were physically born into the faith. Even if you were born into a Christian family, every one of you children, there will be a day God opens your eyes and your heart and draw you to Himself, that you, who were once far off, have been brought near. Look at verse 13. But now in Christ Jesus, you who were formerly far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. What's so beautiful about that to me is the blood of Christ. Christ is a descendant of Ruth. She was the one far off, and God brought her. Through her line, she would also find salvation through the blood of Christ. You see where she is spiritually, and I just wonder, where is our commitments when the times get tough? Spiritually, where are we? Our determination leads to our great new destination. Do we love God enough to cling to Him? Do we love others enough to encourage them towards Him spiritually? Here's the fourth thing I want to share with you. The last few verses, starting in verse 19, is emotionally. Where are we emotionally when the times get hard? We see where Naomi is here. Where is her heart when the times were difficult? See, her attitude truly revealed where her altitude is. So in verse 19, so they both went until they came to Bethlehem, and when they had come to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? I mean, she's been gone for at least 10 years or more. She said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, which means bitterness. She was no longer pleasant. You wouldn't want to have her over for tea that afternoon. Bitter. Just call me bitter. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. It appears here she may be blaming God. Her emotions were shot. She had left her land. She had lost her husband. She had lost her sons. Now she's got a tag-along Moabitess. She has no heart for anything. But she needs to come home, for her family could take care of her. She has extended family there in the city. Verse 21, I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? Verse 22, so Naomi returned, and with her Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. So she left full. She left full from the famine? She left full from the famine? She went to the fertile land and came back empty. She came back to Bethlehem, which means house of bread. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. God is the one who provides. How do you leave full from the famine and come back empty from the fertile land? Perhaps her priorities were a little turned around. See, God is the only one that truly can fill her physically and relationally and spiritually and emotionally. She needs to lean into Him to find all that filling. Listen, God still cares for us when we are still bitter about our circumstances. There are some people who carry bitterness for years, even though they know God, they carry bitterness from certain circumstances and situations. God has not abandoned you just because you may be bitter and broken. Sometimes I have learned that He will allow us to hit the bottom so we have no other place to look but up. Her attitude was low because her altitude was low because she should have been looking up and going this way, but she was going this way because she was looking down. Ruth also lost her husband, but we see no evidence of bitterness in her. She had stopped looking at her circumstances, and she started looking at a God who was beyond all the circumstances. In the midst of all the difficulties, she found God. Naomi kind of reminds me of Jonah. When the Ninevites repented and were saved, how happy was Jonah? Not at all. If there was nothing else that Naomi could celebrate, she could celebrate that at least my daughter-in-law desires God. And God's going to revive Naomi's spirit. He's going to show her He is still active and present. But this really wasn't about Naomi. It was about Christ and about the fulfillment of a promised Messiah coming through even the line of Ruth. We'll learn more about that in the next couple of weeks. But just to summarize chapter 1, I believe there can be redemption through difficulties. When we run to God in these tough times, when we embrace the people around us that know and love God, when we actually cling to Christ and not other things, and we reject the bitterness and see His blessings even through the storms of our life. Listen to Ephesians chapter 3 as I conclude. For this reason I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name, that He would grant you, according to the riches of His glory, to be strengthened with power through His Spirit in the inner man, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, and that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints the breadth and the length and the height and the depth, and to know the love of Christ which surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled up to all the fullness of God. Where Naomi was empty, there is filling when you go to God.